Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Murderboard Podcast, the anthology podcast of fictional mystery horror stories told episodically. I'm your narrator, Walter Williams III. These story and characters are fictionalized and based on my life and the people in it. Episodes of the podcast may contain offensive language, uncomfortable subject matter, as well as descriptions of horror and gore. Tonight, we will be continuing the never-ending murder train. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Part 5. Terror Train. Present Timeline. Shelton has been kidnapped, and Javon brutally wounded, losing blood fast. Zarya and Walter, both covered in Javon's blood, managed to get Javon to the hospital downtown. Yet the lingering feeling of panic still clouds them as Shelton could be anywhere, dead or alive. Zarya, filled with guilt, struggles to keep a cool head, as Walter, his anger has already taken over. He knew where we were. He knew where I lived. Walter keeps repeating this to himself as he and Zarya enter the hospital. The rain outside has stopped, but the darkness is not over yet. Javon entered emergency surgery, leaving Zarya and Walter to pace the floors of the waiting room. A familiar understanding fell upon them. Soon after, Zarya cleaned herself up, got on the phone with the FBI, calling for backup, and to lock the city down to find the killer. A few more hours go by, and no new information on Javon other than nurses saying he's fighting. And as the sun began to rise outside, several people can be heard screaming and running, calling for help. Meanwhile, Shelton finds himself tied up in the back of a moving vehicle. A large van, Shelton's mouth gagged with cotton balls. He breathes rapidly as he starts to panic. Then the van stopped. There's a moment of stillness and silence. The doors to the back of the van open along with some light revealing the metal wheelchair strapped down next to him. Shelton tries to wiggle away but is grabbed by his leg. Shelton is thrown onto the wet, cold ground of the empty parking lot. It is now that Shelton sees the killer. The killer unstraps the metal wheelchair and sits it down next to Shelton. At this point, Shelton turns onto his stomach and begins to crawl away the best he can. As he crawls, he can hear the killer grabbing other things out of the van. He hears what sounds like a power drill, as well as a large container of gasoline. The killer then drags Shelton back and lifts him onto the cold metal wheelchair. Shelton sees his face. The killer then takes the power drill in one hand and a long screw in the other. He takes Shelton's hand and places it on the arm of the chair and begins to drill into it, drilling it through the metal. The killer does this with the other hand as well, and Shelton helplessly screams through the cotton ball stuffed in his mouth. The killer then moves onto his leg, drills into his thigh, into the seat. Shelton cries in agony. Finally, the killer takes the container of gasoline and begins to pour it all over Shelton. Head first, then shoulders, then stomach, and leg. He even pours it down Shelton's back. The killer then takes a match and lights it, holding it up to Shelton to see. Shelton's eyes widen as he cries. Concerned with the screaming and yelling outside, Walter runs out of the hospital. Zarya follows after. They fight through the panicking crowd and find themselves in the middle of the street. At the same time, something is speeding towards them. At first, it looked like a giant fireball shooting down the street. Walter and Zarya jump out of the way, and it gets closer and zooms past them, hitting a nearby parked car. Zarya and Walter rush over and get as close as they can, but it didn't take much for them to realize the burning body in front of them. It was Shelton. ...1950s timeline. As the sun sets, more blood is guaranteed to be spilled. Dante, James, and Kimmy enter the dining cart, only to find absolute horror. While blood covered the floors, it was what's above them that served as the source of the nightmares they will soon have. The body of Harvey Hansen, now split into two halves at the waist, along with his arms and legs ripped off and hung above the bar and folded into what looks like a star. Across the bar, is Professor Albert March, missing his head and positioned in an upside-down cross, and his stomach gutted and exposed. Both bodies hung, strung up with their own entrails. Oh my God. James begins to vomit. Kimmy turns her back from the horror and begins to cry. What kind of hell is this? Dante stood still and kept looking at the bodies. James noticed and grows angry. You son of a bitch. What are you not telling us? Obviously this isn't a normal fucking trade. There's dead people hanging. James stops mid-sentence and punches Dante in the face. While making contact, James falls into the small blood puddles around them. Then the light of the train begins to flicker, and soon every single electrical light source explodes. Following is the train itself as it comes to a complete stop. Outside, night has fallen, but the full moon shines light onto the train. But the moonlight is red. Mr. Ripley, Miss Tosh, we have now reached our final destination. Welcome to the seventh circle of hell. James stands up and looks at Dante, who's now smiling. Kimmy Tosh, still crying, goes to look out the window. Her eyes grow wide as the color red blinds her. Then her eyes spark into flames. She jumps back and screams, grabbing her face. Her face starts to melt around her eyes and up to her scalp. Dante then pulls out a knife from the bar and stabs her in the face repeatedly with the back of the knife until her face caved in. Dante gets up and cleans it off with his shirt. He turns to James, who stands shaking in fear. Tears begin to fall from his eyes. Don't worry, Mr. Ripley. Did you know that she stabbed a man 10 times with a pen in both his eyeballs? That man just so happened to also be a politician working for her family, so he's around here somewhere. But, you know, murder is murder. By the way, I wouldn't look directly out the window if I were you. I'm dreaming. This is a dream. This is a nightmare. I just need to wake up. If only that were true, Mr. Ripley. The two men were interrupted as something stumbles from behind them. It's the gorilla. All right, you. Dante pulls out a book of matches from his pocket. He ignites one of them, and then the whole book. He then throws it at the gorilla, and it goes up in flames and begins to burn. As the gorilla burns behind them, Dante turns to James. All right, time for you to meet my employer. Just then, a foot of a man steps out from the burning ape. Pulling himself out of the flames is Richard Rojo, now with blood-red eyes and smiling at James.
Present timeline. It's been quiet at the Centennial Mental Institution. Eric is about to begin his morning session with his patient, Savannah. In his office, he looks over her files. One of the nurses comes in and lets him know that Savannah is ready for him. Eric closes the file and stands up. The two meet for their sessions in the library on the third floor. Normally, group therapy sessions are held there, but Eric has made it a safe space for Savannah. Or at least, he's tried. The library is akin to a large box. It used to be the padded room until Aaron took over the hospital 3 years prior and converted it to a library. Savannah paces the floor as they begin. How do you feel, Savannah? I don't know yet. That's why I keep seeing you. You come to see me because of how you feel and how we can understand it. Savannah refuses to reply. The last time we talked, you had just seen your old friends. You were pretty emotional afterwards. Let's talk about that some more. Savannah decides to sit down at the table. Do you still consider them friends? Of course. It's to my understanding that you have a difficult relationship with Walter. You've never brought up that before. I don't think difficult is the word. I don't think there is one. It's more of an analogy. When it comes to Walter, caution should be the thing that comes to mind. His mind never stops going, like a runaway train. This prompts interest in Eric. I can't help but think that all this has happened because he created that stupid murder board on Jump Street. Mike, God knows what else. What did he say when he was here? He said that he knew me. He asked why I was here, and he also asked about the books. Eric sits forward in interest. Why the books? He knows I don't read. I told him I'd pretend for you. No way I was going to tell him the truth. You talked about Mike and Shelton last time. You felt sympathy for them. In fact, I believe you said you wanted to give them new life. What makes Walter different? Savannah hesitates. Lack of empathy. And what about Zarya? Remember when I said Walter is like a runaway train? I'm afraid that she's put herself on that train before she realized it. Maybe too late to jump. It's in this moment Eric is awakened to something. He found a solution. He takes off his glasses and walks over to her, grabs her by the hand, and cuffs it while kneeling down to her. Before we continue, I want you to remember the promise I made you when you first arrived. I promise that I will do whatever it takes to give you back what has been taken away from you. I believe I am close to fulfilling that promise. While Eric smiles at her, Savannah becomes slightly uncomfortable. Back at the hospital, nurses and doctors do their best with both Shelton and Javon. But in the end, Shelton is unable to be saved. Javon was able to be patched up, and luckily, the stabs didn't paralyze him. The hospital is now a crime scene and swarmed with FBI. After making her phone call to her old friend to deliver the bad news, Zarya answers to her superiors. Meanwhile, Walter sits with Javon. Hey, big guy. Hey, did they tell you yet? Too much damage, you didn't make it. I'm sorry, man. I'm so sorry. Yeah, me too. We just gotta find the son of a bitch as soon as possible. I think the key is finding out what happened to those people on the train. Javon notices Walter typing on his phone. Walter, it's okay to mourn. I don't mourn. Why is that? Because mourning means letting go, and I don't ever let go. There's a sudden silence in the room. Javon then sits up to the best of his ability. You know, to me, it feels like a movie. One great big movie. I wish it was. I'd be willing to make that deal in a heartbeat. Just a sense of control, sense of power, just to see where this all goes. Javon leans in. I completely understand, but it's times like this where we need to keep a clear head, especially if we're going to figure this out. Do you see what I mean? Suddenly something sparks in Walter. What Javon says sounded familiar to him. Walter turns to him, but due to his mind processing information, doesn't seem to notice the gesture. Instead he asks, "What did you just say?" I completely understand. No, the last part. Do you see what I... That's it. Do you see? Okay, you've completely lost me. Walter begins to flash images in his head. The book Red Dragon, Savannah, the library, Eric. It all became clear to him. Red Dragon. The book. In the book, the killer put someone in a wheelchair and sets them on fire. Just like Shelton. The murder board killer. He's been basing his kills off books, remember? They're variations on books itself. The Mystery of the Blue Train, Dante's Inferno, and Red Dragon. Savannah was reading Red Dragon when we visited her. She said
her psychiatrist had given her those books. What are you saying? Eric. The killer is Eric. Walter then leaves out of the room to find Zarya, but she is nowhere to be found. Walter then runs back to Javon's room, only to discover that he's now missing. Walter runs back and finds his way outside, but is ambushed with a tranquilizer in the neck. You have now reached your final destination, Walter. Welcome to the seventh circle of hell. As Walter passes out, he is dragged and put into the back of a white van. Also in the van is an unconscious Zarya. That night, in the hospital morgue, a bat found its way inside. After flying around, it finally lands on the table where Sheldon's charred corpse rests. The bat rests on top of the body and begins to chew at the burnt black outer layer. Once it has exposed the remaining muscle underneath, the bat bites down, and standing in the doorway, watching, is Emery, with tears in her eyes, but smiling. See you soon. That does it for tonight's episode. Tune in next time for the season finale, part 6, Unbreakable. If you like the podcast, please give it a like, leave comments for open discussion, and share with family and friends. Also, consider supporting the podcast and helping sustain future episodes such as this by hitting the support button /link down in the show notes below. Once again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the Murder Board.